Somewhere in my heart we'll never be apart. Every time I try, you were by my side.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Conscious Fitness Divine Body. As I often said on the show, life is all about magic, and tonight we are going to explore the world of magic, and we have a great guest. Our guide is our special guest. He has explored, unveiled, understood, and practiced for many decades now, and became my personal preferred 21st century magician. Lon Milo-Duquette has written many books about modern occultism, but the topic we are going to discuss tonight is the soft tarot cards and all the magical symbols and meanings and messages that we can find in it. So, Lon Milo, after I read several books of you, wrongly maybe, but I could visualize you as being the Merlin of the Sword of the Stone. I tell you, I just bought that movie to my son, and when I looked at it right after I read your book, it was like, that's him. And why is it? It is because there's great humor that I feel through your book, a great humility, a great insight, and, you know, in short, a great guy.
Oh, well, thank you for those kind words.
You're welcome. I like Merlin, and I think that's exactly the energy that I feel you're vibrating with.
Well, okay then. I'm flattered.
Okay, well, that's good. So, do you need to be a magician to feel that way, though?
Well, I think everybody, in the most generic way, everybody is a magician.
Mm-hmm.
Because magic, in its most fundamental definition, is just causing change to occur. Mm-hmm. In conformity with your will. So any willed act is a magical act.
Is a magical act. So it is. There is something that I read in your book, the Magic of Aleister Crowley, and we will be talking about him in a few minutes. But you said, I quote, "We are all magicians, and we are either competent or incompetent in practitioners of our craft." So this competence we are born with, though, right?
Well, no, we can develop our own competence
in
something. I think what I was trying to say is if you look around in your world and you see people who are very good at doing what they do,
mm-hmm.
they're good at making changes that they would like to see occur in their life,
mm-hmm.
occur in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And these people might not consider themselves magicians. As a matter of fact, I think probably the world's greatest, generic magicians, perhaps never would consider themselves magicians at all. They're
mm-hmm.
just people who have been able to harness their own drives, their own intent, their own goals and powers to visualize and make manifest those visualizations. So,
mm-hmm.
so everybody's a magician in that very generic way. Like, I think the magic that we're going to talk about today is really something a little more specific. It's
mm-hmm.
the type of magic where changes, the magician brings about changes that we may not see all of the forces that go into making those changes occur.
Mm-hmm.
And but even just the simple act of if you and I were sitting across the table from one another, and I ask you, to pass me a bottle of water because I was thirsty, okay? That, my request would be the exact same thing as a conjuration.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would you know, make a statement that expressed my will. I want some water, you know. And then that invisible, you know, my words were invisible. They went across the aether, the invisible aether, and they connected with another intelligence, which is you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set to work, putting to work your nerves and your muscles and all of those things, and you could look at those as individual spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you put to work the demons of your muscles, okay,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and handed me and got the water and pushed it across the table to me.
Mm-hmm.
And for all intent and purposes, I declared my will, and all of a sudden there was a bottle of water in my hand. So,
mm-hmm. Very interesting and very cool analogies. That's very, very cool. All right, so then from starting from there, so we know that we have like another type of magician that we're going to talk about, and one that comes through because of you, of course, because you put it out there. I mean, he put himself out there before, but you talked about it so well. It's Aleister Crowley. So how is he? Was he a magician? Would you define him as a magician?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
And he was probably certainly the most famous, the most infamous, the most notorious, the most colorful magician of the 20th century. He was really quite a fellow, and he developed a terrible, terrible reputation during his life. Mostly it was his own doing, because he thought any publicity was good publicity, and if people were fearful enough or ignorant enough to misunderstand his work and his intention, then he was very happy to frighten them. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he was a very colorful character, just in his own right, magic notwithstanding. He was a world-class mountain climber, and several of his mountain climbing records still hold.
Mm-hmm.
He was, and this has only come out in the last few years, he was a British intelligence agent during World War I and World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And strange little things, like he gave Winston Churchill the V for Victory sign,
mm-hmm,
and told him, because it was a magical gesture as well as a as well as the initial for victory.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an explorer of the mind, an explorer of the soul. He was, in my opinion, a true holy man,
mm-hmm,
and but he was one of the wildest and craziest holy men that you're ever likely to meet.
Mm-hmm.
But he, in his 20s, he got very, very interested in ceremonial magic,
mm-hmm,
and. It may sound funny to say this, but Western ceremonial magic is, in its own way, the yoga of the West.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
He joined an organization, a society called the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn,
mm-hmm,
which has had very, very famous and influential members. In it, and they taught and practiced a form of spiritual discipline that they called ceremonial magic,
mm-hmm,
and it drew on the traditions and the occult and spiritual literature of Egypt and Babylon and Greece. And it was a bright spot. Okay, it was a flashpoint, I guess, in Western spiritual thought. And Crowley got in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Golden Dawn taught the Hebrew Kabbalah,
mm-hmm,
particularly the the numerological traditions of the Hebrew Kabbalah, which really holds as a sacred instrument the Hebrew alphabet, and the use of the Hebrew alphabet as an alphanumeric, sort of like a mathematical portrait of the universe, but more than just the stars and planets and everything, it's a portrait of actually the portrait of the human soul. It's a dissection of the human soul, and oddly enough, out of the Hebrew Kabbalah comes our modern standard tarot deck. And toward the end of Crowley's life, he ended up designing what has become one of the most popular tarot decks in the world.
So what does make his tarot deck more so interesting and so actually, and I don't want to say, but I will, above, but just like so prominent?
You're going to have to say that again.
I said, what does his tarot cards, uh-huh. What does it make so influential?
Oh, well, first of all, it's the stunning beauty of it.
Yes.
And I've spoken to many professional tarot readers that tell me, I don't know who Crowley was, I don't care who he was, I don't care about his magic, these cards are just beautiful and they work and that's all I care about. And, but the artist was Frieda Harris, who was the wife of Lord Percy Harris. This story is so romantic, it almost sounds like a Merchant Ivory film. You know? Toward the end of Crowley's life, in the late 30s, he met at a social event Frieda Harris. It was Lady Harris, because she was the wife of Lord Percy Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And he met Lady Harris, and Lady Harris was an artist, an avant-garde artist who studied under several influential painters, but she also studied metaphysics, the Rudolf Steiner variety of metaphysics under a man named Adams and a woman named Olive Witcher. And they were exploring a very strange sort of abstract concept called projective synthetic geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these wild theoretical things that, you know, I really don't pretend to understand completely, because I'm kind of a simple man. But it sort of presumes that in a painting, the horizon and the forefront of the painting can occupy the same position at the same time. It's a very strange kind of thing. But when you apply it to art, it deals with space as represented as webs, and it's very, very exotic and intriguing, and you don't know whether you as the observer is being pulled into the card or whether the card is jumping out at you. And just to look at it, you know, requires your mind to sort of go someplace it never goes, usually.
Yeah.
And but he met this Lady Harris at a party, and she more or less came up to him and said, you know, I've heard about you. I respect your work, Mr. Crowley, and you're getting old and you're about ready to die. I think you ought to write a book that synthesizes everything that you've learned in your long life in magic. You're old enough now to put everything in perspective, and I think you ought to write that book.
Mm-hmm.
And Crowley, being old and tired and just wanted to go to a party that night, said, no, that's not a good idea. You know, I've written many, many books. I don't need to write another one.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, but you're an artist. I tell you what, why don't you take an old deck of tarot cards and just sort of redo them just a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll write the little white booklet that goes with the cards, mm-hmm. and we can split the money.
Oh.
And she says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I want you to write that book. And they went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, Crowley was an undischarged bankrupt, I think is what they call it. He was so broke he wasn't even responsible or had control over his own assets.
Mm.
So he was pretty broke, and we now know that he was supported by British intelligence probably,
mm-hmm.
in the last,
mm-hmm.
part of his life, but still he was pretty broke. And she said, I tell you what, I'll pay you I'm not sure what it was, £5 a week for you to teach me magic.
Mm.
And then during that time, you're going to write that book I want you to write, and I promise you that I will illustrate it with 78 full-color watercolor paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And Crowley finally said, okay, I'll do it. It should only take 6 months. Well, it took about 5 years for them to do it. And in that time, he lived up to his charge there that Fried had given him. And the book that he wrote, The Book of Thoth,
mm-hmm.
is probably one of the greatest books about magic and the Western Hermetic tradition,
mm-hmm.
that's ever been written. And it's a very, very hard read.
Thank you for mentioning it.
And but anyway, that's how the cards came to be. And he obliged her. They couldn't work together. It was during the war, and he was in one part of England and she was in another, and they had to do it all through correspondence and what little trips they could take during the rationing and the bombings and everything else to see each other. It was a very remarkable story. I try to, in my book, mm-hmm. Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot,
mm-hmm.
I try to show little vignettes of their letters back and forth,
yes.
To each other to sort of put it in context, what an mm-hmm. amazing relationship they had.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So for you, the Thoth Tarot was, like you mentioned in your book, the Thoth Tarot was a catalyst that triggered your metamorphosis from dilettante to magician,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Okay. So there is like a lot hidden, a lot within those cards that we are that we can actually take out in order for us to open up to this magic, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't want to sound corny. But the cards are really magic cards.
Yes.
Even in their coloring,
mm-hmm.
they're colored by the strictest Kabbalistic scales of color.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you didn't dwell on the symbolism of the cards,
mm-hmm.
just how they are arranged and the perfection of how they're colored triggers things in your brain.
Yes.
Just working with the cards, just
mm-hmm.
gazing at these archetypal images,
yes.
and the perfection and the harmony of the colors with the images,
mm-hmm.
Make them on a certain level truly living pieces of art.
Mm-hmm.
And they do touch you. When I first opened my first box of them back in the early 70s, and I'd never heard of Aleister Crowley, or and I wasn't into magic. I was I was interested in tarot. I bought these cards, and I opened them up, and I looked at that Fool card, that very first card, and I went, wow. And I was more disturbed than I was, you know, inspired. The cards disturbed me.
Yes.
They were so beautiful, and but so so intensely strange. And I even toyed with the, you know, the fantasy that, you know, only the devil could make something so beautiful. You know, and in those days, my idea of the devil is much different than it is now. You know. But, you know, you hear the story about the great violinist Paganini, who could play the violin, you know, better than anybody else in the world, and he could make that violin sound different than anybody else could make a violin sound, that the people who were jealous of him said, yeah, oh, he must have made a pact with the devil, because only the devil can play that good. Well, that's how I felt about those cards for a while.
And, you know, it's funny because I had quite of the same experience when I bought my third tarot card. It was, I had the classic one, the Marseille, you know, and, you know, coming from France, I don't know if every French, you know, owns one, but I had one. And then I walked in this little store, and it was just, they were selling crystals and pendulums and card deck, and they had like a bunch of those. There was card decks for everything and everyone, but that one had the cards out, and I went through the one that I had at the Marseille one, but when I saw that one, I had that the same feeling as that you mentioned. It was like, wow. And what was interesting, I purchased it, and it's probably one of the first time it has ever happened to me. Purchased it not really knowing why, but I felt that I had to have it. And then when I finally looked through it and looked at the little book with it, it was like, okay, it's too advanced for me. I don't get it yet. I'm just going to put it down, and it's going to come down to me at the right time, at the right place.
Uh-huh.
And it did. It did. It started to sink in a little bit more. But it was that magic of, I need to get one, and somehow it's gonna, the magic will be understood, you know, sometimes.
Right.
But you know, even one thing that struck me is the back of each card.
Yes.
It was like, okay, that is not just pure coincidence. All those cards put there, this design, this kind of means something. And it was overwhelming at the beginning because, well, you see, there's a lot, and to put it together, well, I had to read your book to just like, oh my goodness. But what was interesting, Lon, I have to tell you that you put it, and granted, I probably have gotten probably just only one tenth of it yet, but you put it in such an easy and simpler way, and maybe I'm more, you know, disposed today to understand it than I was 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But granted, it's just, you know, thank you for your book.
Oh, you're welcome.
It was really an awakening in understanding just the back. Well, now I have to get to the front now.
Well, yeah, I dedicate a very, very thick chapter to just talking about the design on the back.
Definitely, and it does. It does all make sense. It does just like, oh well, okay, and then from there, when you understand that actually even the back has these great meanings, and everything is put at a place that it's supposed to be, and that there is an order, then you understand that all the intrication and everything that has to be within in the front. You know, it gives to me even more intensity and depth to the card deck.
It makes each card a living being, really, with
yes.
a front and a back. You know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So the third tarot, like any tarot, like or any you know oracle card deck, is a tool to self discovery, right?
Oh, absolutely. How can it be otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, many people. The tarot is a wonderful device to use as you know a divinatory device.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that it's almost well it is just a byproduct of the rest of its wonderful perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And you know back to you know talking about what is a magician and what isn't a magician the only changes that real changes that is that a magician can affect in life is changes in the magician.
Mm-hmm.
See, we've only got ourselves to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to change the world, I don't. I first change myself, and then I change the world.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of. And so as a tool of you know self transformation.
Mm-hmm.
The tarot can be a powerful friend, powerful device and tool in finding out more about yourself and
mm-hmm.
Redressing imbalances that mm-hmm. that you have. You know things work. Things touch you
mm-hmm.
that are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The tarot, in a way, is perfect, just like a rose
mm-hmm.
that is just you know open just right, and you see it at the, just the right time of the morning when the dew is just right and the light is hitting it, and your change, truth reveals itself in perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And beauty is perfect, but mm-hmm. mathematics is also perfect, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And part of this Hebrew Kabbalah structure is it sort of lays bare the divine mathematics
mm-hmm.
of the universe, and
mm-hmm.
it does so in numbers. And the tarot is constructed along these numbers. The trumps
mm-hmm.
representing the 22 Hebrew letters,
mm-hmm.
and each of those stand for a planet or a zodiac sign or an element.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the cards are broken up into those wonderful clean four suits. You know, the wands and the cups and the swords and the discs.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those four suits stands for one of the letters of the divine name, Yod, He, Vav, He.
Mm-hmm.
And that formula looks at the world as if it was broken up into four sections, so like the material world and then a formative world and a creative world and then the archetypal world. And then we are reflections of that fourfold structure because we've got our body world, and we've got our mind, our
mm-hmm.
intellect world, and then we've got our intuition world, and
mm-hmm.
then we've got the life force itself. And everything is so neatly arranged and so beautifully constructed. And when you see this laid out in front of you in how these cards are just, first of all, divided,
mm-hmm.
and then you see the wonderful color spectrum move throughout the throughout it all,
mm-hmm.
and you know it is a lifetime study, and no two people study the tarot the same,
yes.
and no two people are transformed in
mm-hmm.
the same way. I wish I could say I'll give you a 10-week correspondence course, you know. and everybody will be in the same place at the end of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't, because we're all different, and we all come into this with a different set of talents and needs.
Mm-hmm.
And the tarot can touch everybody in the way they just need to be touched.
Mm-hmm. So what you were describing, like just before, with the element of the tarot being as well the same as the mind and all those states, that seems to me that vibrates back to the axiom, as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, that's what it is, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard about it or read it, but I wrote a book called The Chicken Kabbalah.
I saw it. I didn't read it, but I saw of it on your website.
Well, I try to make the Kabbalah about as approachable and understandable.
That's what we did.
As I did the South Tarot. But in that, I've got a chapter called The Ten Command Rants.
Mm-hmm.
And three of those command rants say, everything in heaven and earth is connected to everything in heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's connected. Then the next command rant is, everything in heaven and earth is the reflection
mm-hmm.
of everything in heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then right. everything in heaven and earth contains the pattern of everything in heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one in that series, if you look hard enough at anything, you'll eventually see everything. And this as above, so below, you know, if you only had a few words to write a book that was the only book in the world, and it only had one page and one sentence, I think that would be the sentence that would contain the most knowledge, wisdom, and understanding.
Yeah, we're gonna need like a full series of a radio show to just talk about that, I guess.
Oh, but, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the my question is now: when someone does a reading for someone else, they're using the thought tarot or any tarot, but there's always a factor of interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get around that? Like, would you advise someone who is getting a reading to really, like, participate within it, not just be a passive listener, but really actually try to look at the cards and really see and feel and what it actually comes through with the design, with the colors, to really get a own experience, but just not a passive second-hand understanding.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very good tarot readers will lay down the cards and allow the client,
mm-hmm.
we want to call it that, to mm-hmm. allow the client to look at that card and get a first impression of some
yes.
kind. And then the reader can go on to interpret the card. In a way, when you go to a tarot reader,
mm-hmm.
You're going to a reader who uses tarot cards. Okay.
Yes.
And but very, very good tarot readers will allow that image, allow those colors, allow those numbers,
mm-hmm.
allow those symbols to enter into the client's consciousness
mm-hmm.
before you know, they start talking. And not only that, it's always a good idea, if at all possible,
mm-hmm.
to write down the positions, the cards and their positions in the
yes.
spread, so the client can go home with their own tarot deck and lay them out again and
mm-hmm.
And also
ponder
it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I I read cards for people on occasion, and I use a method that engages the client.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I put out three cards and I let the clients decide which card they'd like to find out more about.
Mm.
And I'll go ahead and try to identify their question in those three cards.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a question is not just one question, it's about three questions that actually lead to one big question.
Ah,
yeah.
There you go.
And so I try to use the cards to get what the real question
uh-huh.
is. And then let them more or less give themselves the own
yes.
their own answer.
Yes.
And
there is one thing as well that and I think it's important to reassess it, because in your book, The Magic of Aleister Crowley, you are mentioning one sentence that I like put about 10,000 little cross and surrounded and highlighted, because to me it's like, wow. You said the magician does not necessarily want the burden of existence lifted from his shoulder. He wants to understand why he's carrying it and where.
Oh, yes.
And to me, the thought tarot card does that.
Yes.
It is like, that is really what links it. Okay, we're not here to promise you that how you can be just free of debt and, and happy and everything is going to be pink and you're going to be living in heaven. And no, we just want you to understand, we want you. The challenge is for you to understand why you're living that and where it's taking you.
Right. So you can set to work to do what you're here to do.
Exactly. And that is so, to me, a powerful, it becomes so such a powerful tool, because it is really like, okay, well, I need an advisor here. Like, I have that stuff happening to me, and that's okay. But it's like, why is it happening to me? What should I do with it? Where do I go from there?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it does actually light up life in itself, because there's no, it doesn't become a burden. It is coming from a universal order.
Mm-hmm.
Something is happening, and there's like, okay, there may be a something to decipher that I cannot get right away, but I have some tools that are actually giving me messages to lead me to deciphering it.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Oh, there you go. So to me, that's the power, really, that I can relate to within the tarot cards. And then if we push it a little bit further, we're going to take a few cards to maybe, if you wish, to just mm-hmm. like maybe give it a few insight of what they generally mean. They will all mean something general, right?
Yeah, but there are classic there are classic meanings
mm-hmm.
that and this is where people who are beginning to read the cards, they kind of use them almost like a fortune cookie. We've got certain cards that do indicate love, and certain cards that indicate
uh-huh.
victory, and certain cards that indicate, well, there's trouble happening, and
mm-hmm.
and but in a way that's just sort of a caricature
mm-hmm.
of something much deeper in the card. When actually using the cards as a divinatory device, you're dragging in absolutely everything in the universe to try to tell you about something that's just very specific, you know.
Yes.
And it can be very, very hard. I once, my publisher, Wiser Books, asked
mm-hmm.
me to come to the big, international convention,
mm-hmm.
Book Expo,
mm-hmm.
and read cards at their booth,
mm-hmm.
And I just did little quick readings. And when you start, there's 40,000 people at these events,
mm-hmm.
expos, and when you start shuffling tarot cards, when you start shuffling cards, all 40,000 people seem to turn around and go, oh, I want to read. So there's a line. There's a line. I was only supposed to read for a couple hours, and I was going on 4 hours, and I hadn't taken a break. And
oh,
I,
my goodness.
And I had to cut it off, you know, mm-hmm. cut the line off, because I was just exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was one lady at the end of the line, and she wouldn't go, and she said, please, please. And I said, okay, because she's very sweet. And but I really wasn't reading cards anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had broken myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it really wasn't fair. Mm-hmm. I wasn't giving them real readings mm-hmm. after all that time. I was just shocked. But the first card was the Wheel of Fortune, and so I used one of these just classic caricature meanings for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, your question concerns a risk that you're mm-hmm. taking. And she says, oh, yes, my husband just bought me a bookstore.
Oh, wow.
And so she was at the BEA there, at the expo, you mm-hmm. know, buying her... her inventory, so that's
mm-hmm.
why she was there. And I said, well, okay, you know, I was lucky with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next card I came up with was the Knight of Wands.
Mm-hmm.
And the Knight of Wands is a guy with a black beard riding a horse,
mm-hmm.
riding a horse, black horse. And court cards are very, very difficult, at least for me, in a reading. They, you know, they're just hard for me. And so I just looked at that card, and I was going to confess to her, you know, look, I'm sorry. I'm a phony tarot card reader because I'm just too tired to give you a real reading here. And but before I stoop to that level of honesty, I looked at the card, and I said, oh, heck, lady, does this have anything to do with a black horse? And I was just joking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, my God, my husband sold our racehorse to pay for the book.
Excellent.
And so I learned a lot from that little moment. I learned
yes.
a lot about oracles and for a moment, I actually did get outside of my normal self.
Yes.
You know? And the cards, in their universal imagery and
mm-hmm.
color and everything else, just gave me a little focal point.
Yes.
And I had, and I was just exhausted enough to go ahead and say it, you know?
That's it. Well, but isn't it interesting that The right answer is going to come up. Like, if you don't second guess yourself, whatever is going to come through is actually what you need to focus on,
yes.
right?
Uh-huh.
So whatever the state of mind, you can be like, as far as I am tired, or, you know, I just feel like I'm in depth today and I'm just going to get some stuff. Things are going to come the right way, but there's really this feeling of I need not to second guess myself.
Right.
That is important on the reading.
And this gets back to our self-transformation.
Yes.
Most of our problems in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, is just ourselves trying to continually try to outguess ourselves.
Yes.
It's our own self getting in our own way.
Yes.
And if we could just flow as naturally and mm-hmm. as harmoniously as mm-hmm. as these cards flow in their natural order of things,
mm-hmm.
Then us below become in harmony with that which is above.
Above,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And that seems, to others, seems miraculous. And,
mm-hmm.
and what it is just us being just about as normal as
yes.
as we can be.
Yes. It is. It is very interesting. It's just fantastic the way it works, because I think that... when there's really an awareness of that magic, then suddenly I know that I have a friend, and it was not a long time ago, it was 3 or 4 days ago, she called me, and she had that magic happening to her, like she wanted something. And I said, well, just put it out there and just like, it's happening. It's just happening. Put it out there and you'll see. And it's someone who always wanted to, become a helicopter pilot. And it's been, you know, she's 35 years old and she's always wanted to do that. But, you know, she's a girl. She's not supposed to do it. Her parents didn't want to, blah, 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 blah. And then, but it's still come back to her so many times that it's right there. So I said, just keep it up. Keep it up and think about it. Just put it in your wheel. And you see the universe is just going to rearrange itself if we really believe in it and have faith that that's for your greater good, then it's going to show up to you. And she has a place for rent that has not been rent for like quite a while. And out of the blue, obviously, right after she wrote it down, I said, you know, maybe you should write it down just to make it more like substantial, like give it some substance. And then about 2 days later, she has a guy come and wanted the place and liked the place, and he's a helicopter mechanic. It's like, all right. And she called me, oh, my God, this stuff works. I said, yes, it does. But she realized, I mean, she got so excited that it was so synchronistic. But I said, that's how it is. You should be amazed when it doesn't work.
That's right. You should be surprised when it doesn't work.
Yes. So, all right. We're going back to our cards.
Okay.
The one that you actually, I mean, thank God I was sitting down or even laying down, but if not, I would have fallen. When I read your explanation of the Fool, which is the first card, the first one that comes up, which is the card number 0,
mm-hmm.
The Fool came out. And then you explained that, you know, it's before the one. So it's like from nothing comes the one.
Right.
And it's like, no thing, and comes the one. And it's like, oh, my goodness. that is powerful. And then suddenly, it just really, you know, this card that I'm bringing is like the Fool, what's going on with that? Am I crazy? Yes, somehow, but it just make it, you know, give it so much sense. And I guess it does relate it to the Tree of Life. Maybe
yeah.
You need to mention a little bit about that. I mean, we have about 6-7 minutes to talk about it, but the Tree of Life is something that maybe needs to be approached as well in order to understand a little bit more the tarot card, right?
Sure. Yeah, as a matter of fact, all tarot decks, standard mm-hmm. tarot decks, are based on the Tree of Life
mm-hmm.
and the letters Yod, Heh, Vav, Heh,
mm-hmm.
those sort of thing. The Tree of Life is a diagram that many of us have probably seen, but we're not, you know, kind of familiar with what it's called. It's like 10 circles that are stacked on each other in such a way as they form 3 columns. And the Tree of Life is sort of a cheat sheet. It's a schematic, a cheat sheet.
It is.
Yeah, of the very, very classic fundamentals of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And these circles are called emanations.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can imagine that the one circle is what we think of the absolute God, you know,
mm-hmm.
The absolute deity beyond which there is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just back our camera up into space till we could see absolutely everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all forces and powers and energies and everything, that's the one. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the monad.
Yeah.
And so out of that emanates, there's nothing outside of that. So all the other things on the Tree of Life are just aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Aspects of this one, but in order for us to try to wrap our minds around it, we sort of view this one as being expressed in 10 emanations.
Mm-hmm.
The highest one would be the absolute deity, and the lowest one would be our material universe in our
mm-hmm.
in our you know, everyday consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, us down here in number 10, down at the very bottom, we're really number one, but we just can't see it, and we've got 10 sets of sunglasses on, whereby we can't see that we're the one.
Mm-hmm.
And as we raise our consciousness from a little bit higher, a little bit higher, it's like we're taking off these sunglasses one at a time. And
mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got this higher level of consciousness. Oh, I'm this higher level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Until you finally take off the last pair of sunglasses, and you go, oh, my gosh, me and everybody else is the big one. You know?
Yes.
And so for convenience sake, there's 10 of these.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Kabbalah, they say that humanity is made in the image of deity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things that separates us from deities, or separates us, say, from the animal, other animal kingdom,
mm-hmm.
is our hand, and because we have these opposable thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
That really does, as you know, anybody, that makes a big difference in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so our hands, the number 10 is a very, very, very big number in Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, we could look at the tree of life, the numbers, the sephira, the emanations
mm-hmm.
on this tree of life,
mm-hmm.
as being how many cards there are, you know, in a suit
mm-hmm.
of the tarot.
Mm-hmm.
The number one would be the ace.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And each of these trees of life is an expression of one of those letters of the divine name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh.
Mm-hmm.
So there's our four suits.
Mm-hmm.
And our, you know, our four sets of cards. And it is just so, so convenient. You know, sometimes the most magical thing I do in a day is taking a deck of shuffled tarot cards and put them in Tree of Life order.
Mm-hmm.
If I do nothing else perfect that day, I've ordered a universe. You know?
Well, that's a good task.
But in doing so,
uh-huh.
I'm working with these principles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm programming myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm as I put the cards in harmony with their structure, I'm putting myself in harmony.
Very good.
With the structure.
Very good. Okay, I'll do that tomorrow morning first thing.
Okay.
My husband is going to be like, what are you doing? I'm ordering the universe here. All right, so, and I guess, again, you know, there's so much to say that we're going to probably need to have you back on the air with us.
Oh, please do.
I will, because we're kind of running out of time, but I think we kind of got a sense for people who are, you know, beginners out there, or were wondering, well, why should I get a reading, and what is it for, and how is it going to help me, or can I do it? I think that it gives a little bit of an answer on how this is really a tool to self-discovery, and as I always say, self-discovery leads to self-empowerment, therefore can only get the good off of it, right?
Right.
Okay, so Lon, thank you so very, very much for your time. I know you are pretty busy between all the books, and I invite everyone to get on the www.lonmiloduquette.com to find more about you. You have videos as well. You have many, many books and seminars, workshop classes. You can even learn a little bit more about some secret society things.
Yes.
And yes, and then definitely we will have you back on the air, because I think it's just intriguing and very it's so powerful that I think more and more people are opening to it anyway, so I think it's the right time.
Yes, I do too.
Okay, good. So thank you again for your time.
You're
and,
welcome.
And we'll get you back as soon as possible.
Okay. It's a joy talking to you.
Thank you, Lon. You have a good evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, listeners. And don't forget, next Tuesday, and for probably the next 5 or 6 of those, we will have some guided meditation and practical exercises that we will do live on the air with you through BBS Radio. You will be able to experience what's above and bring it below, and hopefully get some insight and support for your spiritual quest. I wish you a very good evening, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Can I fly away back to yesterday? Somewhere in my heart we'll never be apart. Every time I try.